Good morning. Good morning, campers. I'm Kathleen, compulsive eater, bulimic. And welcome to the Sunday morning breakfast event. And I'm going to introduce our speaker for this morning. His name is Carl, and he's going to share his experience, strength, and hope with all of you. So please help me in welcoming Carl.
I'm okay. Good morning. My name is Carl, and I'm a compulsive overeater. And before we get started, I gotta take a few deep breaths here. First of all, I want to thank the committee for putting on a phenomenal weekend. So they did a great job. And as someone who has chaired these events, I know what they've gone through, so thank you guys. And I'm sure your homes and your partners and your loved ones and your beds will be happy to welcome you back, because I'm sure that's where you're going this afternoon. I'd also like to express a debt of gratitude to Roseanne, one of our co-founders who left us Thursday. And I thank God, and I thank God for her, and I thank her for having this program so that I can be the man I am today. And I think a lot of us feel the same way, but I wanted to be sure that it was said. So I said it. Okay. First minute is always the hardest. So, as I said, my name is Carl. I'm a compulsive overeater. For those who are interested in numbers or facts or figures, I've been in program. April will be 25 years, and this past December I celebrated 22 years of continuous abstinence one day at a time. And for me, it's always important to say one day at a time, because I know for myself and what I've been through and for what I've seen and heard of everybody else, that all I have is today, and that the person that has the longest abstinence in the room, well, it's probably me, because I've been up since 4 o'clock this morning. But if someone got up before 4 o'clock, you've got more abstinence than I do today. Okay? So it really is one day at a time, because I know that there's food over there. There's food every place. There's food in my house, and I live by myself, so no one's going to tell me stop or do or what to do or not what not to do. I have to rely on a power greater than myself to make sure that I know what my boundaries, what my parameters are, and to do them. So a little bit about the background. I am a middle child of a middle-class family. Anything you just thought about middle children, I'm the poster child. I have an older brother who's homophobic and I'm gay. I have a younger sister who's lesbian, and we didn't talk for many years. So the sexuality had nothing to do with our being close or distant, and the non-sexuality had nothing to do with our being close or being distant. It had nothing to do with it, but that's just who I am. That's where I come from. My mother passed away 3 years ago. I was very close to her, and after being in program for a number of years and my father having passed away, one time I said to her, I said, you know, Mom, I really love you. She says, yeah, I know. And I confronted her because I finally got up the courage to say, you know, Ma, I don't think you've ever said I love you to me. And she said, but you know. I said, yeah, Ma, I do. Because that's where I come from. That's who she was. And thank God for this program. That's who I've become, that I could accept her answer and still love her. She may not have given me the answer I wanted or needed at that moment, but that was the best she could do. And, you know, she didn't do such a bad job. Look at me, I'm standing here. So growing up in that environment, I was born gay. So that means that I was not athletic. That means I did not play around on the school playground. I did not get along well with the boys. And being almost 65 years old, so think about it, I was in elementary school over 50 years ago. Not being athletic and being a boy, I was shunned. So I had no friends. And, well, I did have a friend. My friend was food. And I snuck it, and I stole it, and I stole money for it. And I've made a lot of amends, and I carried it on my body. I was always the fat kid. I was always the kid that never got chosen for anything, sport-wise. And I was just as happy because I could just hibernate. And so I learned how to be emotionally shut down. You know, there are a lot of things we learn on the schoolyard besides how to play sports. We learn interaction. You know, when I was growing up, we were told not to use four-letter words. And in those days, we meant the F word and the hell and the damn. Well, they forgot that shoe was a four-letter word. Love is a four-letter word. And we were told not to use them, so we didn't use them. And so it got to be very, very hard. I did not know how to interact with people. My first date was in college. And even then, it was because, well, it's what everyone was doing, so I guess I should do it. I ended up going to my high school prom with a friend of a friend of a friend. I lived in New York City, and she lived in Nutley, New Jersey, which, for those of you who don't know the geography, it's a schlep across the bridge. I mean, but, you know, somehow we made it work. And it wasn't really a date. It was just a female to have on my arm. Because in 1967, I don't think, well, first of all, I wasn't out as a gay person. And second of all, I wasn't quite ready to, the world was not quite ready for two men to go to the prom together. And in some places, the world is still not ready for two men to go to the prom together or two women to go to the prom together. And you know what? That's their loss. That's their loss. So I grew up in that environment. My brother thought, and I think he still thinks, but it's none of my business what he thinks, that he's the prodigal son and he can do no wrong. And that's his thought process and he's entitled to have it. Whenever we have conversations, I share with him openly, honestly, from the bottom of my heart. I say what I need to say, and he'll come back to me a couple of weeks later and say, you know, I hate to say it, but you were right about such and such. And I finally asked him one time, I said, why is it that you hate to say that I was right about something? What's wrong if I was right? Well, because I'm the kid brother and he's supposed to know. You know, that's his mindset. That's what his higher power thinks that he should be doing. He has his life to live. I let him live it. Of course, I'm grateful that he lives 3,000 miles away. It helps that he lives in Florida and I live in California. And, you know, we keep a healthy distance. And I do that for two reasons. One, the geography. And two, emotionally and spiritually, he's not the best person to go to. If you wonder who my real brothers are, take a look around the room. You're all sitting here. If you wonder who my real sisters are, take a look around the room. You're all here. Yes. Because I stand here on your shoulders. I stand here because I came into Overeaters Anonymous 25 years ago, and you taught me the things I never learned at home, that maybe I, quote, should have learned at home. I learned how to be a good brother. I learned how to be a good son. I learned how to be a good employee. I learned how to be a good fellow. And those were hard lessons to learn because I didn't come in until I was 40 years old. And, you know, by the time you're 40, the hard wiring is really hard wired. I mean, it's really hard to work at that. But it's what I learned I needed to do. When I came in, I was eating one meal a day. That's all I ate was one meal a day. Had breakfast in the house, ate a snack in the car on the way to work. When the Roach Coach came at work, I went down there and had that. I had lunch. I had another snack in the afternoon. I went down to the Roach Coach when they came later in the afternoon. I had dinner when I got home, blah, blah, blah. Just continue. Some people would call it grazing. To me, they were meals because they were big enough to be meals. I ate. When I lived in New York, didn't matter. I ate that much, but I walked a mile and a half to work, and I walked a mile home, and I was out dancing four nights a week. It was great. I moved to California, and, you know, when you move to L.A., especially my experience, is that they attach this thing to your right foot. It's called a gas pedal. And you drive every place. I was stopped in the San Fernando Valley here one time because I was walking to work. I had a part-time job, and I walked the mile and a half to work. And because I didn't have a dog with me and I wasn't carrying the Sunday Times, the police pulled over and said, "Are you okay?" Yeah. Why wouldn't I be okay? Well, because I wasn't dressed as a walker and I didn't, you know, and I go, no, I'm just walking to work. In this town, it's not heard of. But It's what I do. I'm still a New Yorker. I still love to walk. You know, my office is about 3/4 of a mile from here. That's where I parked because I said, I get to walk a little. I get to get a little exercise on the way to the meeting. Woohoo! And so I don't come from the mindset of being in the car all the time. So I ate one meal, and then I started showing it. And a dear friend of mine found program before I did. Another one of those moments. My friend Kate was a binge buddy of mine. And we would eat together, and we would curse together, and we would carry on like wild, crazy people. And we had wonderful times together, and then she came to program. And damn it, she lost 150 pounds, a physical weight. 150 pounds, and I was not impressed. Didn't care. But she also lost that cutting edge that we shared. That's what I cared about. I missed that. So after she'd been around for about a year, I realized I like that. That glint in her eye, that peacefulness, that serenity. I like that. Where do you get that? Only took me another year to go to my first meeting. I'm a slow learner. So it took me another year to get to my first meeting. I went to my first meeting at a military base in Honolulu where she was living at the time and I was traveling for business. And I finally got to my first meeting. And if you've never been to a meeting on a military base, which now is, unless you're in the military, you can't get to since 9/11, they're very different. As the judges here take alcoholism and send alcoholics to AA, the military are very concerned about weight. And if you're overweight, they will send you to OA. So I was in a room with people that were forced to go there and had to go up to the secretary and get signed that they had been to a meeting. So it was a very interesting experience. And then I came back to the mainland, and it still took me 6 months to get to a meeting. And I was scared. Now, don't ask me why. When I look back now, I was scared. So when I see newcomers, I know how they feel. Because not only was I scared, but I was going, and there was no reason to be scared. I'd been to a meeting with someone who shepherded me along. I was going to a meeting at the Gay and Lesbian Community Service Center, which in those days was on Highland Avenue, and I was still scared. And it took me a long time to get there. Don't ask me what I was afraid of, but I was afraid. So, of course, I finally got up the gumption. I walked in, and for those of you who knew it, as you walked in, there's a bathroom just to the left, and someone I knew from someplace else walked out. And she said, "Hi, Carl. Are you going to the Overeaters Anonymous meeting?" How'd she know? And I had the courage to say, "Yes, as a matter of fact, I am," as opposed to running out of the room. She says, "Come on, I'll show you where it is." And I've been coming back for 25 years because this is home. This is home. And I'd love to say it's been a bed of roses. I'd love to say that it was easy. I'd love to say that I was struck abstinent and then I stayed abstinent and I haven't had hard times. Then I think about this past week, even though I'm still abstinent, and I think about the first 2 years where I was abstinent the first year, and then I lost my abstinence, then I gained it, and then I lost it, and then I lost. And then I realized that I needed to work this program. So I started, well, before that, my father passed away right after I was new in this program. My dad, the way, if I ever want to know how long my dad's been gone, I say I'm 22 years absent, so that means he's gone 22 and a half years. Because he died in June, and I had been absent up to that point. And I went down to my family, and I'm Jewish, so that means when somebody that close dies, I was sequestered with my family, my brother who's homophobic, my sister who wasn't talking to me at the time, for a week. That's called hell. And I was with them for a week, but you know what? I made it through. I abstained. I was great. I was hips looking cool. And that was June, and by August I had lost my abstinence. When I look back now, I say, what was different? I was abstinent. I followed my food plan. But I was not working the emotional or the spiritual sides of this program. So, for me, if I'm not working my spiritual program, I might as well be over there eating every piece of everything that's still out there. And believe me, when I looked at the display when I came in, I thought, well, that's mine. What's everyone else going to eat? Because I could go through that. My stomach would hurt. My jaws would hurt. My mind would say, feed me, and I would. So there's that voice in my head that gets louder and louder. And, for the longest time, I looked for the volume control. Okay? I kept trying to find the volume control to shut it off. I wanted to shut it off. So what did I do it with? I did it with food. I did it with work. I was a workaholic. I did it with drugs. I did it with sex. I did it with alcohol. I did it with spending. I did it with internet surfing. I'm a compulsive fill in the blank looking for the volume switch to turn it off. And I finally found one. This volume. This volume is the dimmer switch. The Big Book of Alcoholics Anonymous turned down the craziness. Didn't turn it off. Can't turn it off. I've given up trying to turn it off. That I know is not going to happen. But this volume can turn down that volume. And it does a great job. But it only does it if I pick it up. You know, if it's dusty and it's sitting in the house or sitting in the car, or if I don't pick it up and I don't use it, it's like any tool. It's like any muscle that I have. If I don't walk, my legs will atrophy. If I don't do any of my other exercises, those muscles will atrophy. Well, what makes me think that my abstinence, that my program is not a muscle that can atrophy as easily as those can? So I have to work it. And a lot of times, I don't know about you, but I get the I don't wanna's. There are days I get up and I just don't wanna, and I don't wanna, and I don't wanna. And I get up at 4 o'clock in the morning because of my schedule. I need to be where I need to be. And I get up at 4 o'clock in the morning and I'll get out of bed and I go, I don't wanna. As I'm walking over to my chair, which has these three books sitting right next to it. And since I know we're being taped and you can't see it, it's the Four Today, Voices of Reflection, and 24 Hours a Day. As you can see, got lots of tabs. If you look inside, lots of notes. And I sit down and I read these every single morning. And as I said before, I was a slow learner. It takes me a while to learn things. I learned I can't read these once. I read every page twice. I read it, then I read it a second time, and then I say, now what principle is this about? What is this about today? To remind myself, because I'm going to forget from the time I said, because come on, guys, it's 4 o'clock in the morning. It's dark out. It's cold and it's dreary. But you know what? All of a sudden, I will read those three books. And then I'm not done. Through this program, I've found my way back to my faith of choice, and I read a daily meditation book in there as well, because that reminds me of the precepts of that. Which I've also incorporated in my life because that's part of who I am. And I'm not done yet. I have a kitchen timer that's hands, I can reach it with my hand. It's always in the same place. I love my kitchen timer. I use it for lots of things. But in the morning, it's set for 10 minutes. And I spend 10 minutes talking to God. And I have to do it on a timer because I'm a compulsive fill in the blank. And left to my own designs, I will go on and on and on. If I know I have 10 minutes, man, I get to the point. I get to the point, say what I have to say, and I do my prayers, and I talk to God. And I ask for what I need, and I ask for what I want, and I ask for what I want for other people. Because I don't only pray for me, I pray for those that need praying for, in my opinion. Both good and bad. And I'm not done yet. I set that same time for another 10 minutes and I close my eyes and I let God talk to me. And I meditate. And I sit there quietly for 10 minutes. And again, the reason for the kitchen timer? It's 4 o'clock in the morning. I'll fall asleep again sometimes. Although, you know, I used to, but lately, the last 6 months, I haven't had that urge to go back to sleep. And to me, that's God in my life. You know, that's just that ability to know this is what I have to do. Then when that timer goes off, then this is what I have to do. Then this is what I have to do. And for me, I need to have a schedule. I need to know this is what I'm going to do. This is what I'm going to do. And as long as I have that laid out, and as long as I have that set up, I know I can't go wrong because I follow my schedule. Now, I am a compulsive person, and my schedule is written in pencil. It is not in stone. Things happen. There are some mornings for whatever. I mean, I work a second job, so sometimes I'm getting home at 11 o'clock at night. I ain't seeing 4 o'clock in the morning. It just ain't going to happen. But this still has to get done. This has to get done for me to stay sane. So the books go with me to work. I get a lunch hour. I make sure I do it on my lunch hour. On the way to work, I will talk to God. Now, when I first started doing this, no one in the car was talking. Now everybody's on a Bluetooth or whatever. And I really don't care what other people think about me. And I'm just talking to God. I'm talking out loud because I know that if I don't talk to God. I'm not going to have a bad day. Lightning's not going to strike me. I'm not going to get in a car accident, I hope. None of the tragic things are going to happen, but I'm not going to have as good of a day. So if on a normal day I have a 10, the days I don't do this work, I'm going to have an 8. Then you may say, 8's not so bad. But you know what? I can still arrange to have the 10. Why wouldn't I go for the 10? Why wouldn't I want to go for the 10? And then there's also the sponsor to call and the sponsees to call and the writing to do and the I don't wanna's. And you know what? I'll say, Carl, it's okay you don't want to. Just do it. Because that's what my sponsor would tell me. No, he wouldn't. He'd just say, okay, you don't want to do it, don't do it. Because I get a choice. Just like I get a choice whether I eat the food over there or not. Just like I get a choice whether to come to the birthday party or sleep in. Just like I have the choice. But I've learned that my life is better if I choose the path of recovery. I don't want to be one of those people that was given this wonderful gift and threw it away by accident. I don't know about you, but I've heard of people, and I think I've done it also, where, you know, oh, there's a piece of, you know, there's an envelope or something, you throw it out, you find out there was a $50 bill in it, or there was a gift certificate. I want to look at everything. I want to look and make sure I know what I'm doing when I do it. So, since being in program, I've lost both my parents. First one, I lost my absence. Second one, I kept it. My soulmate, the woman who brought me into program, passed away, and I can remember being in her house in Kansas City, Missouri, in January. As I lovingly say, I spent a month in Missouri 1 week. It was cold. I mean, I'm from New York, but it was cold. But I can remember being in her house and one night before going to bed, screaming at God at the top of my lungs. And it wasn't, why did she die? It had nothing to do with that. It was, I can't do what I need to do because I was the executor of the estate. And I was just screaming. I can't do it. I can't do it. I can't do it. It's not fair. You've asked too much of me. You tell me that I've been told in these rooms I will never be given more to do than what I can handle. And I can't. I can't. I can't. And I was mad and I was angry and I was screaming. And I believe I screamed and cried myself to sleep that night. Next morning, there was a knock at the door. And one of the major things that was standing in the way of my being happy, joyous, and free at that time, as much as I could be, was resolved overnight. To me, that was my higher power taking care of me. When I'm willing to take those first three steps, I can't, you can, please do. Real simple. I can't, you can, please do. When I'm willing to turn it over, when I'm willing to get out of God's way, miracles happen. And I get excited about my life. And I can't think of a better place to be than in recovery. I didn't spend a lot of time on my history because I really don't like to dwell that much on it. I do know that having been the fat kid, being been the sissy boy, having been not popular with boys or girls, left a mark on me. And the reason I keep coming back here is I walk in the rooms and I see people I haven't seen in a while. And whether I haven't been around or they haven't been around, and the love and the nurturing and the caring that is here just by walking in. I was telling a friend of mine that I went to a meeting in a different city one time, and I said, you know, I was just welcomed with open arms. She says, yeah, of course, because OA is better than a family, because here we can't throw you out. You're always welcome, you know? So if you go someplace else and you walk in, poof, you're welcome. I don't know about you, but sometimes my family, you walk in, it's like, what are you doing here? And you know what? Sometimes that's okay, too. You know? I have a miraculous, miraculous relationship with my sister today. We had many years of strife. And a year ago this past December, we were together as a family one more time for part of our religious observances for over our mother's death. And she made an amends to our family for the way she had treated us for the last 13 years. Think about it. That's a long time. 13 years. She treated us like we didn't exist. But I always included her. My brother had his opinions, and I said, you know, she's living her life out of her vision. Let her do it. Thank you, OA. I would have been right on that bandwagon. She's wrong. She should do this. She should do that. No. Thank you, OA. You taught me how to be a better brother, and I heard what she said. And that was in December. Her birthday is in January. I sent her a birthday card. We've been thick as thieves ever since. And she says, I don't believe that I cut you out of my life for so long. I said, you know what? It's in the past. Let it go. Here we are today together. I'm sure she's calling me right now as I'm on the phone, because this is our usual time to talk on Sunday morning. And she'll just say, the message will be, I hope you're all right. I hope you're having fun. I'll talk to you later. What a change from someone who wouldn't even take my phone calls. Thank you, OA. That's what you people have given me. That I have a relationship with her. That I can be honest with a brother that I don't like that much. And just say, you know, for a number of years, our mother lived with him, so I would call every Sunday just to check up on Mom. Well, you know, as long as you're checking up on Mom, I might as well find out about the rest of the family. And when our mother passed away, he said, does that mean you're not going to call on Sunday anymore? And I said, you know what? Let's play it by ear. Let's see how it goes. I learned, don't make commitments. If I wasn't sure, I can say I'm not sure. He's the kind of person that I have to accept. I accept him just the way he is. I don't have to like it, but I have to accept it. And I love him just the way he is. If he were to call right now, I'd be there in a heartbeat. I'd be shocked. Man doesn't know how to use a phone. He only knows how to call back. He doesn't know how to call. That's my issue, not his. That's my issue that he doesn't call me. That's not his issue. He thinks he's fine. And he is. He's better than fine. He's wonderful. He's a great human being. That he and I don't see eye to eye on things? Oh, well, guess what? I probably don't see eye to eye with all of you people either. And you're as much, if not more, my family than he is in many levels. So I am very grateful for the life that I have here. I'm very grateful for the people that I have here. I've had, lost, and gotten new jobs numerous times while being in program. And I learned here how to be an interviewer, how to be interviewed. I didn't know. I thought I had to say what people wanted to hear. No, I just tell my truth. And if I don't get the job, at least I have my integrity, my honesty. I have my self-esteem. Because that's all I've got at the end of the day. Because I really don't care what they, you, or anyone else thinks about me. I'll listen, and I'll file it away. And if I think it has merit, I'll run it past my sponsor. Because that was something that I heard when I first came in, get a sponsor who has what you want. And my first sponsor had everything I wanted. He had the boyfriend I wanted, the house I wanted, the car that I wanted, and the job that I wanted. That was everything I wanted. Obviously, it didn't work out. And that was okay because, you know, I needed to learn. I needed to learn. I had to take my baby steps. And after I broke my abstinence when my dad died, I went to a meeting. And I didn't go to meetings for a while because I was ashamed. And I used to work with a woman who was in program. I knew she was in program. She knew I was in program. She was a director that had an office with a door. I only had a cubicle. We had business dealings together. There was no reason for me not to go into her office and close the door at any time for any reason. I never availed it. I would walk right past her office and go to the candy machine. And I walk right past, I mean, I walk right past the open door. Even stick my head in, maybe, and say hi. Of course, try to hide the candy bar. But I would do that because I didn't want to avail myself of the tool of making a phone call, making outreach. So if I don't use the tools, I can't build the house. If I don't build the house, I don't have a home. If I don't have a home, I'm not in OA. So I need to use the tools. So I would go to the candy machine. And when I came back into program, I went to a meeting, and the speaker was someone that I knew. And of course, my idea was I went to a meeting I'd never been to before, so no one would know me. Not. People I knew were there. I said, well, I won't know the speaker. Not. It was someone I knew. But all along, what had guided me back into the program was God. There was always a voice. I would lay in bed in the morning and say, today's the day I'm going to do it. Today's the day I'm going to abstain. Today's the day I'm going to do it. And of course, by 10:30, I'd be at the candy machine. And one morning I said, today's the day I'm going to do it. And a voice said, no, you're not. At the time, I only lived with myself and two cats. And if they were talking English, that was the first and only time they did it. Because I'd say, what's wrong? Are you sick? Meow. But that time I got an answer. So I said, okay. And I knew enough to say, if not today, when? And that was sometime in July. So I said, okay, August 1st. I'm going to go August 1st to a meeting. I got out of bed and looked at a calendar. It was a Sunday. So I said, okay, I'll go to this meeting, this big meeting that I know on a Sunday. No one will know me there. I walk in. Not only do I know people, but I knew the speaker. And I remembered what you guys had told me. Meeting's over. Go and thank the speaker. So I went to thank the speaker. And he looks at me and goes, I know you. Shit. I said, what? He says, I know you. I said, really? He says, yeah. Thank you. He said, I spoke at a meeting at the Gay and Lesbian Center, and you were there, and you were pitching about how you were going to your parents' house, and you were going back to where the disease began. Yep, that was me. I went to the next week I went to the same meeting, he was there, and I asked him to be my sponsor. 24 years later, we're still together. I don't get away with nothing. I don't get away with nothing. And that's the blessing of the program. And I'll say something, and then a couple of days later, I'll say something else. And I'll say, you know, Carl, you're not that good of an actor. You're not pulling this one off. Now tell me what's going on. Part of me goes, damn it. And then that's one of those four-letter words. And part of me goes, okay, here it is. And after all these years, it's still hard for me to be honest, because that's who I was. And he calls me on it, and I'm grateful. And I always tell him that. I say, I'm grateful you call me on it. Keep doing it. Because the more you do it, maybe I'll get to the point that I can do it naturally and instinctively. Sponsorship is another one of those tools. Again, if I don't use the tool, I can't build the house. If I don't build the house, I don't have a home. And I read, I write, I make phone calls, I sponsor, I am sponsored. I want to remember that the first word of this program is we. It's not me, it's we. And I need to be here. I need to be around my fellows. I need to gratefully and graciously accept the love and caring and inspiration you guys give me, as well as giving it. As I said before, I stand on your shoulders. I couldn't have done this by myself. I'm so grateful that there are people that have been here longer than I have. And I'm even more grateful for the people that have been here less time than I have, because I learned such wonderful things. It's so nice to hear a new insight or a different insight on something that I think I know, whether it's a step or a tradition or a situation that's going on in my life. We long-termers, and I consider myself one of them, once you hit 20 years, you're a long-termer. My definition, who cares? Once you hit that, we don't know it all. Because if we knew it all, I wouldn't have to be here Sunday morning. I wouldn't have to be at meetings. I lovingly tell the story that I go to a meeting on Saturday morning, and I show up with my 22 years thinking I'm Mr. Hips looking cool. And my sponsor's sitting there with 32 years, and he doesn't think he's hips looking cool. He knows he's not. Because his sponsor's there who tells him no, because his sponsor has 34 years. And you know what? We're not hips looking cool. We're compulsive overeaters in recovery. That's all we are. We have one day at a time. And don't get me wrong, being a compulsive overeater in recovery is not a bad thing. It's not a good thing. It's a thing. It's a thing. It's part of who I am. I'm 6'1½", not 6'1", not 6 foot. It's a thing. I have hazel blue eyes. It's a thing. I'm a compulsive overeater. It's a thing. And yes, the food still calls to me at times. And there are times I want to eat more. And as my experience as a man getting older, my portions have had to shrink, pisses the heck out of me. Pisses me off. To me, that's a meal. No, that's a feast. My meal is half of a restaurant portion. They bring me a restaurant portion, I cut it in half, and I ask for a to-go box right away. Because if it's sitting on my plate, I may want it. I may get tempted. If the conversation isn't going my way, if I don't like the people yet, I can have more reasons to eat that other half. But as soon as they bring me the to-go box, you know, my mindset changes. You know what it changes to? Wow, I get to have this tomorrow for lunch. This is going to taste good not once, but twice. What a great thing. And so I don't get to eat a full restaurant meal anymore. And it bothers me. I've also had to up the E word. Ugh. Ugly word. I used to like, someone in program used to say, the only exercise I do is running up and down the 12 steps. I've since learned that's not enough for me. And I went over to a friend's house who's not in program the other night, and she had an exercise bicycle in her bedroom. And I said, I love your closet. Thank you. I love your closet. She says, yeah. I said, do you ever use it? She says, no. I said, okay. I'm just asking. And then I got home, no matter how late it was that night, and I used mine. Because I know I just assume not. I don't want to. Again, I get the I don't want is. I get the I don't want is. And so I got on my bicycle. And because I have to up it. I have to decrease my food, increase my exercise to maintain where I'm at. That's another four-letter word. Damn it. Don't like it. But I am told in the big book, acceptance is the answer to all my problems today. You know, I have a choice. Years ago, I went to a doctor who's now my cardiologist. And based on my family history and everything, she said, you have two choices. One choice is you can change your food plan today and live a lot longer, or you can keep eating the way you're eating and you'll probably have onset adult diabetes as your family, you know, based on your family history. Choice was mine. Needless to say, I changed my food plan right then and there. I listened. That's another thing. I listened. When I came in, I was general manager of the universe. I knew everything. I knew it all. And I told you. And if you didn't do it my way, you were out of there. Don't have a lot of friends from a long time ago, for obvious reasons. But I learned that I don't have to be general manager of the universe, and that I can listen and learn, and I can even take actions. I went to a doctor, and make a very long story short about my cats. It turns out, yeah, I really am highly allergic to cats. And as much as I love my babies, I had to let them go. Now, you talk about God working. I did it at a time when every single animal shelter was full and overfull. There were advertisements all over the place. No one would take animals. You couldn't get rid of them. I mean, you couldn't give animals away. I sent out an email to all my friends saying, I got to do something. They're in a loving home. They have been since I had to give them up. They were taken by a friend in this program. Her son took them because he just thought that was the right thing to do. He wasn't looking for pets. But he heard that I needed to find a home. He said, I'll do it. That's God for me. My higher power shows up for me every single day. That I can drive from here to Las Vegas and not have accidents continually. That I can sit at my desk and have my people that evaluate me give me bad evaluations and literally read me the riot act. And I can listen and hear what they're saying and not get defensive. That I can let it in. And respond appropriately, not with defenses, but appropriately, that I can be present, that I can listen to my sponsees when they've whined about the same thing for the last 20 years. And then I remember, maybe I've been whining about some of my things for the last 20 years to my sponsor, and how does he treat me? So I learn by being around. And if I'm not around, I'm going to stop learning. And as much as I hate school, I really do. I'm not a good student, never was. That's one of the reasons I read all the pages twice. I mean, I'm just not a good student. I accept that in myself. But that also means that if I keep coming and it keeps being repeating, kind of like Chinese water torture, you know, just keep dripping and dripping, it'll chip away. I'll get it. And I'll find the inspiration that I need, and I'll find the answers that I need. But the only way I can do it is by being here and participating in my own recovery. Because if I don't participate in my own recovery, no one can do it for me. This is not something someone can do for me. I can't hire someone to go to my meetings, and I can't hire someone to call my sponsor or, you know, ask, you know, someone to do any of this for me. I have to suit up and show up. And today, I do it willingly, lovingly, and anxiously. It's like, yeah, what's new? What can go on? What can I do today? What's out there? And when I get the I don't want is, okay, fine. A feeling is a feeling. A feeling is not an action. I can't tell you the number of times I feel hungry and it's not a meal time. That's great. I feel hungry. Big deal. Sit with it. Be with it. Write about it. Say the serenity prayer. Ask God why you're hungry. Ask God if you're really hungry or if you're just having a feeling that I'm interpreting as hunger. Sometimes it's just a feeling and I think it's hunger. Well, that's my brain. That's stinking thinking. When this volume goes up, I pick up the other volume. The volume here goes up, the volume here goes up. If my head goes crazy, I pick up the big book. I pick up literature. And one day at a time, I just continue to abstain, and I thank you for giving me the opportunity to share my experience, strength, and hope. I'm sure someone has something to say about something. There's always announcements at these things.